Now, gentlemen, welcome to your recording. So, welcome to the Agora. I'm here with Noah, and I'm about to call you Paul, but that is not your name.
It
is your name. Lord, how expected.
Dr. Paul.
Dr. Paul Rafford. Dr. Low Profile Paul Rafford. So, basically, I'm going to do the 2-second summary. You're a doctor. I don't know what your speciality is.
I have 3 specialties, family medicine, preventive medicine, occupational medicine.
Once upon a time, you lived in GCDC Tome and were a hippie from hell.
Yeah, I think I was actually conceived in the dome, was I not?
I think that's likely, yeah. Although we were rather active at that period of time.
So it's a crapshoot where.
Like I said, real deal. And Noah is a disaster and complexity guru. Finishing a PhD and wondering how to apply leverage to the worst of the world's problems.
Well said, thank you.
So, the topic I hear is, did the 60s succeed or fail, or the hippie movement in general? I am obviously biased, being roughly between your ages, and you know, anyway, so, wade in.
Well, this has been the topic of ongoing conversation more or less ever since we could converse. Is the world getting better or worse, and did the hippie movement contribute to that in a positive or negative sense? I generally tend to weigh in on the side that it's neither black nor white, but there are certain elements of decline that the hippie movement contributed to, and certain elements of altruism that the hippie movement contributed to, but I'm on the opinion that the hippie movement was altruistic and utopian, and that's what it's good at, and totally ignored power and resource limitation, and that's what it's bad at. And that combination produced things like corporate Appleism.
And my opinion is that the hippie movement was primarily self-determinist, survivalist, and semi-apocalyptic. And the concepts that drove us to try and both reorganize our lives as well as assert ourselves in a social order that appeared to be increasingly materialistic and destructive to the world fabric are the essences of what the lines of hope are for the development of the world culture and survival.
Now, at this point, it should be made clear that I am actually a hippie, right? You got it lineally in that you were, you know, you came from a hippie family.
Indeed.
Whereas I went to the farm in 1995 and they gave me geodesic domes and global environmentalism as a perspective. And my entire life turned about 60 degrees and I never looked back. So, you know, in a lot of ways, I took the hippie stuff on pretty much straight second-generation concentration, whereas you, of course, being in a hippie family, rebelled against it and became a prep. We're at the correct word. It's a singular of the preppy. So, you know, in that sense, some parts of it clearly, you know, had a major impact. The culture of the well, the whole
Absolutely.
Earth catalogue.
Absolutely.
I mean, the high points are there, but there's also this catastrophic failure of the left, which happens in the same period.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I think the recurring theme is that the values, aspirations, and maybe even tactics of hippieism, all of the DIY movement, all of the, you know, quote unquote back to the earth movement, and these types of things are the right tactical approach. But maybe, you know, maybe putting it in a more generous phrasing, it was like 35 or 40 years too early. You know, this is something that should be done at the crest of collapse, and maybe it mitigated and prolonged the peak climax period of civilization there by accelerating consumption and bringing on systemic transformation in a negative way faster than if we just kind of run around as our little gray-suited corporate organizational man and then woke up to the fact afterwards.
Premature rebellion.
Premature, we can call it premature enlightenment. Ejaculation.
What do you reckon, Doc? You were there.
Well, the concept of Kun and the structure of scientific revolutions is that you must try and promulgate these ideas against great resistance until they coalesce enough to actually cause a breakthrough transformation in the larger body politic or scientific field. Mm-hmm. And the primary elements of looking at family values, looking at values of coexisting with nature, of being able to sustain yourself, survive mm-hmm. apocalypse perhaps, mm-hmm. but primarily inject yourself into social and organizational change for the good, mm-hmm. while it may have delayed the collapse after successive concepts of storing food for a year and expecting everything from Atlantis to rise to the nuclear destruction. I got tired of thinking the world was going to collapse and said I should put my bets elsewhere, although I still keep food.
Well said. A fair number of my friends have a very large box of tinned tuna because they talk to me. So the pivot here is, what would it look like if it worked, right? So, and do you know Nature Girl? Mountain Girl.
Yeah.
Mountain Girl. So Mountain Girl went to Burning
Man. Ex-wife?
Yeah, I don't know, something like that. Okay. So she went to Burning Man a couple of years ago. Yeah. And said, you know, this is what the 60s was really about. Right. These people are actual hippies. All that flower child crap that came afterwards once the politics had gone out of it, that was not us.
Right, right.
And I found that very interesting. The idea is that the kind of core hippies were actually much more like burners, and that they were feral bastards.
There's a great article on this about linking basically Burning Man as the recruiting ground for Silicon Valley intellectual elite.
Oh, the first time I went to Burning Man, right next to me, there were 7 RVs. That was the Netscape engineering camp.
Exactly, exactly. Now, this is kind of my point, because we can look at SiliconValley.com entrepreneurism mm-hmm. as the encapsulating the best and the worst of American modern interpretation of hippieism. Right, it's taking the tools out of the IBM corporate defense industry, putting it in the hands of the consumer, mm-hmm. you know, enabling and engendering people to do what they want for their own purposes, all of the positive things on that. But the net systemic effect is promulgating consumption, promulgating the status of the upper middle class. I'm not making a Marxist argument here. I'm just saying.
I mean, what it promulgated was the idea that you live life for experience, not for piling material goods around you. And the overall element, and you discussed this with me earlier about, you know, adventure as a means of charitable work and cross-cultural dissemination and even help, is, I see more and more what people are doing, even in America, but also I see in Europe, the idea that you simply live your life to have a greater TV is, I don't find applicable.
Okay, I can tell you guys where the 60s died. Right? It died in, I think, the Mojave Desert in about, actually, I think it might be San Diego, in about, I think, 52, 53? It died in a lab accident. Do you guys know who Jack Parsons was?
Parsons School of Design? No.
Jack Parsons was one of the founders of JPL, right? Mm-hmm. The P in JPL, mm-hmm. off the record, stands right. for Parsons. The company that Jack Parsons founded still builds the solid rocket boosters for the space shuttle. Mm-hmm. And Jack Parsons wrote a book called Freedom is a Two-Edged Sword in, I think, 1946, which is the most radically intense spiritual libertarian text ever written. Mm. So Parsons, of course, you know, got his initial chops from Crowley, and was also partly responsible for Scientology, because he's the guy who gave L. Ron Hubbard his basic training. Hmm. But the thread that was missing from the 60s was heavy technical capability and libertarian politics. And Parsons, if Parsons had lived, would have been a contemporary of Leary's. He would have been about the same age. And it would have been the missing section, which was individual freedom in a political sense and real capability in space. Think of the vibe that attaches to the modern rocketeers who came out of the video game industry.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Armadillo, these guys, I think right. that's a great example of the hardcore engineer meeting exactly. that type of libertarian right. expressionism.
But Parsons, you know, think of how different the 60s would have been if Leary or Ram Dass or Ginsberg had died 10 years before it started. Mm. And Parsons is one of the missing keys, because he was the space threat.
Right, but yeah, I think...
But the beat generation...
If I may.
Generation.
You were there.
Which was... essentially self-indulgent and led to the early hippies, you know, do your own thing, mm-hmm. I do not believe was anything more than a counter-reaction that quickly died out.
The Beats themselves.
The Beats and the Beats weren't for anything. Well, they were for expression and just live in a stream of consciousness.
But play this forward 30 years, right? I mean, San Francisco, the birthplace of the hippie movement, mm-hmm. San Francisco is now the place where the young go to retire. The only way you can live in San Francisco is if you are a dot-com millionaire, or you have a trust fund. Now, I'm exaggerating here, so I'm not, you know...
But that's partly because the value base that was left, right? In many ways, the sort of social technology of the 60s is the core tech of dot-com companies.
Absolutely, that's
right. Which you rely on but for your entire
profession, of course. So play that out in the context of global political economics.
Okay,
right?
So what we're talking about here is technologically induced superconsumption as a side effect.
Absolutely, in an increasingly narrow realm of elite. And it's the kids and the intellectual kids, if not literal kids, the hippie.
But this is a very delicate thing, right? Because what we've got here, the other background trend is the tech leverage.
Yes, which has been absolutely, and that I would argue has been enabled by the hippie approach. I mean,
okay, so what you're saying here is that the hippie approach works really well for getting things done in some circumstances, and as a result, we're getting the wrong things done because we didn't adopt the value system too.
Ha-ha. I disagree.
I could argue.
It's not the technology, which there was a tremendous reaction against, except appropriate technology and right-sized technology. Mm-hmm, what came out of it was the elements of caring beyond yourself, whether it would be the environment, whether it be social justice issues, whether it be political activism. These things were almost absent other than in small splinter movements that perhaps were utopian. And now I find that most of the progressive changes that have disseminated into the society and in the global community are those essential values.
Mm. Okay, so I will hang on a second. So I will take that right on the nose in that that's exactly what happened to me. Right, I went to hang out with the hippies on the farm. I got the technology slab, which was, have you heard of this guy Buckminster Fuller? Would you like to see our GZ dome? By the way, you know some math, don't you, Vinay? Right? But the other thing that I took out of that was an absolute look around this, you know, these people had spent their entire lives in a communitarian context and were burned to the bone because they'd had to have community meetings over everything for 50 years, 30 years, right? And at that point, I'm just like, this is not the way. Whatever this is not the way. This is where that's what laid the emotional foundation of the decentralized infrastructure work I did at RMI, which was if people have to share, they're going to wind up hating each other.
And this is, I just was rereading some of Garrett Hardin's later work, you know, Tragedy of the Commons. He plays that logic out to lifeboat economics in his essential conclusion, which is actually quite conservative, is that when it gets down to a resource-limited, resource-competitive environment, that sense of hippie altruism and communitarianism inevitably fails when competing against more structured forms of self-interest, basically.
But when you go into disaster scenarios, which I've deployed into as well as deplored the effects of, and you yourself were making the remark, communities come together. Yes. Feral activity, you know, profiteering is actually the exception to the rule.
Only within the immediate 72 hours.
Okay, but, right, I mean, all of this stuff is old school evolutionary biology.
Exactly right.
But there's a substantial chance that it's cross-cultural and not affected by whether you're a hippie or not. That stuff is potentiated.
Agreed.
I think what we're actually tracking is the fact that we don't know what the world would look like if the 60s had won. And if you don't scuttle the ship, there's a risk that it'll fall into the hands of the enemy.
I feel it did win.
Yeah, agreed. I agree with you. I think they won in a limited sense.
Hang on, but there's one, right? You know, if they had succeeded in levitating the Pentagon, which I will not admit to having tried. Nice. So they're very nice people. So very well intentioned. So, by the way, we're at 12 minutes. So basically, had the 60s won in a huge way, right? And had you seen the assumption of political power for those values, then I think we would have seen a very different future. What we got was this mixed bag, which is kind of how history typically works.
Yes.
And ordinary mumble-mumble capitalist super-consumption culture has magnified the worst of the 60s and commoditized it.
Yeah.
Right? But at the same time, something like 15 million Americans do yoga. The entire environmental movement comes out.
Absolutely. Agreed. Right. Totally agreed.
So
I share your opinion.
And social justice issues are now, whether
they're
lip service. That's what?
That predated. I mean, Martin Luther King wasn't a hippie, you know?
No, he wasn't a hippie, but the idea that those elements of individual freedom, social change, reached a level to where, whether it's the conservatives and the Tories pretending they're the party of change, now it is the buzzword and on the superficial but general
level of consciousness.
But hang on. If you go back one round of this game further, right, you get the 1870 to 1915 period, where Britain basically goes through its hippie revolution, right? Victorian era ends, everyone goes nuts.
Right.
And you get this, you know, plethora of interest in the occult and crystal hugging, and you get Blavatsky and Crowley and, you know, Yeats, and all of this stuff happens, right? And in a lot of ways, you look at that and say nothing came of it. On the other hand, if it hadn't happened, how much worse would Britain be?
Agreed. No, I support the notion that hippieism succeeded, but it succeeded in a way which produced this hybridized sort of bastard at the end of the day.
So you're talking about unintended consequences, right? You give people the right to do what they want, and then they abuse it.
However, the point, again, going back to Kahn, is that these things don't happen overnight. The idea is that, yes, there's going to be fits and starts, misdirections and changes, but this comes to our central point of disagreement. Is the world better off, and is it, or is it heading toward a greater apocalypse because things took time to... Before you deal with the real point.
More fundamental point is the hippie movement utopian or not? And I argue it is, because just what you said, you're arguing a teleology that it didn't quote-unquote succeed by absolutely totalizing its values.
This has to be grounded in history, right? I mean, you're 34. Okay. So you were probably just a little too young to take the full weight of the nuclear thing on the nose.
Oh man, I've got photos of me as a four-year-old, six-year-old running around dressed as a skeleton in anti-nuclear protests.
All right.
You didn't hide under your desk with...
Right, I didn't, I didn't internalize the fear of nuclear war.
That's exactly
I internalized the fear of social collapse.
So the internalized fear of nuclear war, right? I mean, I'm probably about the youngest person who got that full bore.
Mm.
And that, my entire generation, everybody older than us, is completely insane.
Mm.
Because we grew up thinking that our governments were going to murder the entire planet for reasons we didn't understand. But I'm bummed, right? So once you get out from under that nuclear shadow, the world looks very, very, very different.
Mm.
Because it goes from being an unmanageable, unmitigatable apocalypse to being a series of survivable scenarios.
Mm.
And the same with the population bomb. The idea that we're just going to overpopulate, now that has self-corrected.
Yep.
Stewart made the same argument in his book.
It's heavily leveling out.
Well, in India and in China, they're actually not even reproducing enough to sustain their population.
But
Germany pays a bonus.
Meat consumption per person is skyrocketing.
But again,
net effect.
The core question is what's going to happen. The answer is we don't know.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
It's really, really simple. I mean, the question's about... I mean, for me, the thing that always guides my thinking in this is... six rednecks, a pickup truck, and some mortars in Saudi Arabia.
Mm.
Right? I mean, if somebody takes the terminals, the entire world changes and the future becomes completely unknowable. And there are lots of things like that. That's only the known unknown.
Absolutely.
Never mind the Rumsfeldy unknown.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's kind of arguing about what will happen, no point. About what's happened, there's a little more room for.
See, I think scenarically in this approach that... scenarios plus complexity plus globalization equals a guaranteed formula for radical transition, right? Now, we don't have to assign to that a positive transition, a negative transition. Think of it as lateral transition. It's transformation,
so
into something totally unknown.
Old order is collapsing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Or transform.
I mean, collapse, maybe it's collapsing to the left.
Whatever is happening, right?
Or the right, and not politically. It's collapsing.
But here's the thing. What we have is this worked example that, you know, many generations put their lives into.
Yes.
Of you can do small-scale agrarian and not go feral, right? And maintaining that as an option has been incredibly expensive. That's consumed, you know, hundreds of thousands of people's lives in the States for generations.
But if I could interject, I disagree that that was the result of that experiment. I think that what that experiment, the back to land hippie communes, was that living in a self-sufficient manner is hard, grueling work.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, they turn their back on it.
But
like, that's why the hippie communes generally tended to fail.
But the thing is, you don't die of it, right?
You were never forced to do that. It was always
a
suburban.
Small fragment of both the hippie and the back to the land movement.
You bet.
People were getting their 1 acre, 5 acres in independence. This is where the organic farm movement came
from. That's right.
Where the looking at pesticides and contaminants came from.
Yes.
Granted, the intellectual legacy is profound and has informed everything modern political leftism.
But it's not just the intellectual legacy, it's the strategic option.
But this is my point. I don't think that strategic option was really maintained as an open door. I mean, even given that this wasn't... I mean, I you know, case in point, I was just back in Boston a couple weeks ago, had a conversation with an oyster farmer. The guy's like a sixth generational oyster farmer. And he's writing a book right now on, there's this whole move to buy local, to revert to organic produce, etc. But what that doesn't take into account is the social and political agenda of farmers, right? The generally tend to crust of the earth people, good people, with limited in the best sense of the word social sphere, and that they, you know, hard working, hard trusting, hard earned relationships based on difficult circumstances and eking out a living, right? That's not a kind of friendly, happy-go-lucky type relationship.
Nobody's always friendly and happy-go-lucky.
Hang on. Yeah. The only reason anybody's going to exercise the back to the land doctrine on a mass scale in America is because they have to.
Agreed. Exactly.
Right?
Agreed.
But
Right now, the family farm is now reasserting itself. They have immigrants, they have people that are going to take small scale agriculture.
But this is a scale question, right? I mean, for me, I think in terms of anything less than 1% mortality, I'm not interested in. Right? Lots of people have that covered. If people aren't dying of it, it's not my problem. So could you actually relocalize an enormous number of Americans as a way of avoiding mass mortality? Yes.
Of course, absolutely. Right? There's so much land in America.
And the how-to for that, the roadmaps you would follow if you wound up in that situation are the stuff that the hippies maintain consciously or unconsciously.
Great.
That's what I mean.
Dentachlorophenol.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Yeah, babe.
Absolutely.
I told somebody about that in Haiti last night on a phone call at 1 a.m. By the way, if you want them to last 20 years, pentachlorophenol, you know the stuff he's like, oh yeah, oh, I hadn't thought of that. See? Good work.
And I would also point to the other element, which is, of course, close to my profession, is the tremendous change in health and medical delivery, both United States, personally, and worldwide. Yeah.
So, I mean, part of this is that you're using different frameworks for evaluation, right?
Yes.
Because the point is that what you've got is diffusion of cultural values, and we all agree on that. And the thing that you're pointing to that is, even in spite of that diffusion of cultural values, we're still burning the world down.
in spite of, but perhaps because of. This is not
a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
I'm not per se.
But well, okay.
Demonizing the hippie movement.
Wait,
I'm just saying.
There's a historical cultural.
Guys.
There's a direct parallel, and the direct parallel is bad Christians, right? The good Christians will say, if you really understand the entire thing in a deep spiritual way, it makes you a better person. Mm. Everybody else looks at the sectarian viciousness of mainstream Christianity in many areas.
Absolutely.
And says a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Good example.
Right? And I think that this notion that you can have corruption at the edge of things, which comes from people taking the bits that enable them to do what they want to do anyway and not doing the hard work of changing, we see it everywhere. Why would any movement be exempt from it? Communists?
Absolutely. Same thing. Everything.
Well, let me ask a question to see if I understand your point. It sounds like you're saying that the ideals, the direction of the hippie movement were not themselves destructive, but because it staved off destruction, it's a bad thing. It's like,
he's saying that people co-opted it and were stupid.
Exactly. Taxi's here. Hold on.
Uh-huh. Hello? Splendid.
Brilliant. Thank you.
We've solved the problems of the world once more.
All right, wrapping up.
Splendid.
Closing statements.
Dr. Refford. Closing statement is that the primary currents, in my belief, that can lead to sustainability, global community, and true caring are the essential lines that came through the hippie movement, and it's the salvation of the world.
Whoa.
Dr. Gupta?
No, you go first.
Okay, closing comments. In an ideal world, I totally agree with you, and I sure as hell hope you're right. I think history will prove us wrong.
All right, so I'm going to say this is a technology diffusion thing, right? You know, the bottom line is that it takes a long time and often external force for cultures to change in massive ways. But, you know, what we know again and again and again and again and again is that these things often bubble under the surface for generations. And an excellent example of this is Hebrew. And in fact, Zionism in general, that was a fringe movement inside of Judaism until the Holocaust and then took over as the only remaining viable political option.
Because the mainstream movement wiped
out. Right?
Yeah.
And similarly, in a post-peak oil future, or if you wind up with massive war in the Middle East above what we've got now, or unthinkable things happen, like we lose air travel because there's a gigantic eruption, you're going to see that this option that's been maintained becomes viable. Mm. And if it wasn't maintained, I think we could see much worse breakage. Because there's a huge range of scenarios in which the ability to do low-cost medical care, get people back onto the land cheaply, and all the rest of that stuff becomes valuable. Mm. Right? And I think that this thing of maintaining options is important.
And the question is, what if it doesn't collapse?
Well, okay, here's the other thing that the hippies never really got on top of, which is It might be an option in the States, but if you take the hippie lifestyles and upgrade for peasant farmers the world over, man, that's progress.
Well, absolutely. If that actually is achieved, it's got to be a separate discussion around what if it doesn't collapse, because that's a different strategic framework. But in response to what both of you guys are saying, totally, ecosystem models of collapse, all the social models of transition, it occurs when the dominant structure gets wiped out because it's too fragile and too embedded, and it's all of the fringe elements which repopulate the terrain, right? Mm. And so what you see immediately thereafter is immediate vicious competition, not necessarily vicious in the violent sense, but vicious in the vigorous sense, right? Yeah. And so what we're talking about is utopian hippie values, hippie communities competing with Hezbollah.
No.
Yes, because absolutely. Hang on, competing with all the fringe.
That's completely
the
artificial model.
What you're
talking about is bankrupt suburbs wondering what to do. Some of them start farming,
and you have
some of them don't.
But what you have is people looking for an ideological and social framework which allows them to not die.
There's an enormous mid ground this doesn't touch, which is dollar drops to 20%.
Yes, exactly.
And everybody then goes through a process of adaptation, but it doesn't turn into anarchy.
Like Dugald says, the end of the world, as you know it, is not the end of the world.
Right, and the hippie option is perfectly sensible for some people.
I agree completely, but I use Hezbollah as an example. But you're going to have a plethora of competing worldviews, and it's going to be a competition.
Mormons, right? Various kinds of Baptists,
totally
hippies,
fundamentalists of all stripes, hippies of all stripes. Yeah,
well, I think it's already happening.
Agreed.
Splendid. Okay.
Turn it back on.
Last word, Don.
One question that is important is to keep open a wide variety of options, both in our contingency planning as well as in our personal lives. The idea that we are betting on collapse, we're betting on feral communities, is a sure recipe to disaster.
Hell yeah. All right. That was the Agora. Woohoo!
Good one.